I'm Stan Raven. I used to be from somewhere else, but I'm not there anymore. And you are listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
Hi, I'm Pete Kirchhoff, inviting you to join me every Thursday at 9 a.m. for New Morning, the WGXC Morning Show. We'll have news headlines, weather updates, the 9:30 coffee break, first take, and a mix of rock and roll, folk, country, blues, and soul. That's all on New Morning, Thursdays from 9 to 11 a.m., only here on WGXC Acre. On this new morning.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Art Omai, an international center for the arts located in Ghent, New York. Art Omai, the Fields Sculpture Park, presents the works of internationally recognized contemporary modern artists and architects in an outdoor environment open dawn to dusk, 365 days a year. Art Omai offers a year-round indoor gallery, calendar of public arts events, as well as international artist residencies. Art Omai believes that exposure to internationally diverse creative voices fosters tolerance and respect, raises awareness, inspires innovation, and ignites change. Information at artomai.org.
Good morning. I'm Kevin Factor, and this is Foraging Ahead. And on today's program, I have the actress Mary Stuart Masterson. Mary Stuart moved to the Hudson Valley with her husband, actor Jeremy Davidson, and four small children, all under the age of four at the time, in 2013. And Mary Stuart sat down with me after I took her and her kids mushroom hunting, and we sat down at a picnic table, and Mary Stuart helped prep the mushrooms for the dehydrator, and we chatted about all manner of topics, from growing up in Manhattan, the daughter of a famous Broadway actress and a famous director. We talked about her children and family and being an older mother, and how the film and television industry has changed.
Nice knife.
Yeah.
Awesome. This is a nice Japanese knife.
It is. You knew it. And this is. Yeah, I got the German one also, just because I'm a big fan of the Axis cutlery.
Let me ask you a question first.
Ask.
Did John McCain just die?
I don't believe so. I think he's...
Is he in a coma or something like that?
I don't know.
Because I just was on the... I heard they were talking about it endlessly, so I wasn't sure if that meant... That has happened. I couldn't tell if they're speaking in the present tense and the past tense in all of the, and it was MSNBC, so they assume you can watch it, but I'm in the car, so I can't watch it. So I was wondering.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's always, the dead are always with us, though.
That's true.
So.
That's true. So you have a brush. You brush.
I got a brush. I'm just going to brush these a little bit. You see all these little holes?
Yeah.
So I should,
Get in there.
You get in there, and those are all bugs.
Now I can really see.
And but your kids were super.
So beautiful.
They were so. I really love taking kids out. Like here.
Yeah, it was awesome.
They are. They're. Like,
it's also such a great. It's such a great experience for them. You know, I mean, and Cleo is able to. She's a girl.
Well,
it's
just
different time of life.
Like they're smarter.
I don't know. But, you know, there's all that energy and...
I think
it's
both,
hard to stay...
Both Wilder and Mosley were...
At their incredible moments of focus.
Were on it, you know, and I like, you know, that moment where it's just like, oh, all I know is this little bit of knowledge.
Yeah.
You know... And I know something now.
Yeah.
And then, like, all of a sudden...
And they don't
want
more than they can handle, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I sometimes, as my son will attest, I get a little bit excited and start talking about mycorrhizal relationships to eight-year-olds. And
you dip it, and I usually... This is how I do it.
Yeah, however you want to do it. To be honest...
Get the dirt, but not get too much water.
I don't...
I tend to not
worry too much about getting all the dirt off. I think it's not too bad to eat. So this is a side of Mary Stuart Masterson, a famous actress that most people don't get to hear about, which is the
food part,
the fungus side.
I'm a fungi. No, I do love the mushrooms. I can't say I've the eating kind, the edible kind.
Oh, yeah. No, don't worry. Nobody listens to my show. You'll be fine.
No, but actually.
Really?
Yeah. I'm boring that way.
Really?
So, wait. Now, what this one...
That one, which I was, would... Yeah. What is that? Yeah, that's fine.
You want to dehydrate
this one?
Yeah. But you're going to slice this
gonna,
sort of...
I'm going to cut it in half. You know. It's all right. Look at these. So meaty.
They're beautiful.
And so you have dehydrated mushrooms before.
Yeah. And... I have rehydrated mushrooms before. My favorite trick is the paper coffee filter.
Oh, tell.
So, you know, just like any pour-over obsessed Brooklynite of coffee, I have a lot of different cones for drip coffee. You know, we've got the
I did not know Chemex. That was a characteristic of Brooklynites.
Oh, it's Brooklyn. I guess it's Portland, Oregon.
Or that you considered yourself a Brooklynite.
I suppose. Well, and not by your standards.
Well, I mean, my standards are old standards.
You know, by the standard of someone who grew up in Manhattan and moved to Brooklyn in 2006, I guess that doesn't count at all.
No.
Not at all.
Because
I only did 10 years. But
you did 10 years of Brooklyn.
But I grew up in... I did grow up in Manhattan, so I'm a New Yorker.
You are a New Yorker.
I'm a New Yorker.
But you don't have the accent.
Oh, God, no.
Did you ever have the accent?
My parents are both from the South.
Oh.
And so when you talk to them, you know, they both were actors and studied with the various method actor teachers out there. And one had to lose one's Southern accent.
Really?
So my father... would sit older than me, my sister Lexi, would be sat on his lap, and he would say, "How now, brown cow?"
Oh, really?
Yes. Right. Proper diction.
Elocution.
Yes.
Yes.
And my sister already had a Southern accent, though she, too, was raised in New York City.
Huh.
How now, brown cow? And then... pretty soon. I never had that.
You never had it?
No. But I did have people at the schools that I went to, because my name was Mary.
Mary?
They would call me Mary.
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 Oh.
And then I would say, it's Mary Stuart, because it's not hyphenated, my name.
Ah.
But it is Mary Stuart.
It's Mary
Stuart.
It's
a Southern name, so it's two. It's two words. But no hyphen.
Okay. Do you remember the name of these guys?
Old man of the woods.
Old man of the woods. These are...
they are beautiful.
Smell that. That is...
oh,
just the earth.
No, but there's a floral... there's a floral note there, too. Wow, that's gorgeous. Okay, so back... okay, coffee filter.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, right, so you talk about the coffee filter.
Right, so you take the...
you have to keep me on track.
You take the cone,
uh-huh.
And you know the paper filter that you put in the cone? The triangular-looking thing? So, if you have dried mushrooms, you boil water, and instead of just, you pour the water over the mushrooms and let it sit for a few minutes until they rehydrate, and then you pour it through the filter, mushrooms and all, to get any last bit of soil out of it.
Oh.
And then you even squeeze the mushroom to get the lovely... last essence of the mushroom into that liquid.
Mm-hmm.
You don't put too much liquid because you want to reserve that liquid, and it's so good in a stock or it's good in a sauce, so that you don't lose that when you rehydrate them.
Oh.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
That's a wild trick.
Nice trick. Works well, especially for a risotto or something like that.
Mm.
Oh, gosh, this is beautiful.
Aren't they lovely?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which one is this one? This was the...
that, you know, I mean...
the milk...
No, that's not a milk cap.
No.
I think you guys took off... this is a milk cap.
Oh,
so it has
okay.
gills. It has
oh,
gills
right, right. And this is spongy.
That's a spongy. That's a bolete.
Bolete.
Yeah.
That's very cool. So So how many times have your listeners had the pleasure of hearing you talk about boletes and mushrooms and foraging? And
The show used to almost exclusively be like foraging, and
then all your spots got hit too
hard.
And then
I sort of, yeah, I was seized with this panic at one point. And it was right when I think Hudson was doing, and I rail against this all the time, and people, the Ramp Festival.
Oh, yes.
You know, and I'm like, this is not going to be sustainable.
Right.
And I am, ironically, you promote something you love to do.
Yes.
And you simultaneously destroy your ability to do it.
Yes.
And it's very, I think it's very hip now. And
it is.
So.
That's why I did it today.
Well.
It's hip.
Because it's hip. I know.
As you can tell, I'm super hip.
Yeah, but it's fun.
Me, you know, what rolling up in the minivan.
Like, Phineas didn't look, seem like he was paying attention. He takes stuff in.
Oh, yeah, man. He
was...
At the end.
At
first, I was not interested. Yeah. And then I was just... I found it very fascinating.
He's just kind of, he's totally paying attention. That was really cool. Yeah.
He has a tremendous memory.
Mm-hmm.
And also, he's a smart kid, Dad Phineas.
Well, I mean, apple doesn't fall far from the tree, I say. The apples don't necessarily have to fall close to each other, as my friend said.
They also roll.
And they roll.
That's what we hope for. Children are like at least 2.0, right? We're working for evolution, right?
Yeah.
So we're hoping that they're smarter than us and better than us in every way.
Do you find yourself like your model for parenting, which is... Like, super, I should say, your kid was having a bit of a meltdown in the forest. And fair enough, David was like, Dad, it's like these little kids, we're out here for like 90 minutes and you're dragging them all over the forest.
Oh, no, it's fine.
And they were...
Oh, it's fine.
And, of course they're going to have a meltdown. And
sometimes they do,
sometimes they don't. And, like with four, I mean, gosh, if you can't roll with it, you're doomed.
Yeah, it's true. In fact, that's a funny thing you mentioned, because the other day, Wilder didn't get his way, and he sat down and he went, "Oh, I'm doomed."
Oh, no.
And I was like, "Where did you get that? You're doomed?
Doomed.
You're
doomed. That's great.
Because you didn't get one more piece of, cornbread or something.
Right.
Not exactly doomed. You have it pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the end of the world, everything.
I know.
The end of the
world. It's, it's hard. I think the hardest part is when you have four kids, and we have four kids that are very close in age.
Yeah.
The hardest part for us is to surrender our perfectionism and allow ourselves to not be great as parents. All the time. Just be like, there's no way to meet everyone's needs.
No.
You have to surrender to trying your best and then being accountable for when you screw up. And, and give them as much as you can and let them make their own mistakes. Like, there are times where you're just like, I can't have hot eyes everywhere. And I can't keep them corralled and helicopter them to death. And they're going to, and I know there's
how very illiberal.
The blessings of a skin knee and all that idea. Like, it is very important for people to make their mistakes, but it's hard when you're grandma age,
You're listening to Foraging Ahead. My interview with Mary Stuart Masterson will continue in a moment. And next segment, she talks about her children again and her marriages and how they make their marriage work and families.
What's funny, they play superhero games. They played superhero games before they watched any superhero media because they knew who the superheroes were.
Right.
It was like having a pantheon of gods.
They got, absolutely.
They'd be like, oh, this one has this power, that one has that. They don't have to watch it. They could play it and inhabit
it. It's almost, it's archetypal.
Yeah, totally.
They are archetypal.
So it's like, fine.
Yeah.
You know? But they're going to do what they're going to do. And they come out so different. They come out who they are. It's like, they're just... My example is I have twins,
right.
Boy, girl, twins.
Now, that's Mosley?
That's Wilder and Cleo.
Oh, Wilder and Cleo, right.
Yet. I'm not Mosley.
Oh, I know. I'm so sorry.
I love how, like, honest they are. It doesn't matter. They don't care. They'll just let you know, and then fine.
Slip this guy.
Wilder and Cleo were born 20 minutes apart, and Wilder, and both of them sort of... You know, in one in each arm, Wilder would always try to get his mouth on my mouth. He's like trying to kiss me as a swaddled. He was tiny, and he just wanted to be held, and he wanted to be held all the time. And Cleo had this look on her face that was just like, we called her stone cold.
Is that
stone
right?
Stone cold Cleo, because she had this deadpan. She still can do it, and people think she's really quiet, but she's super observant.
Mm.
And they just came out exactly. Who they are, and they're exactly who they are. They're twins. They're, you know, gestated the same, nurtured the same, but they're completely, completely different personalities. And it's amazing. All four of them are so different.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so funny.
Yeah. You've got a, you know, you have a community. I mean,
we almost have a culture.
I mean, that's.
We almost have a basketball team.
That's the thing with big families. It's, I mean, I always wanted, you know, like a big family because they always seem so much fun.
Did you have siblings?
I have a younger sister, but you know, did your parents ever get divorced?
No,
they stayed together.
I know. They're in the show business, the business we called show.
Yeah,
and they're still married and they're still alive.
How did that happen?
I don't know. I mentioned they're Southern.
Is that right?
No, I think they're...
It's just the weight of history kept them together.
No. The war. No, my dad said at all of my weddings... No, I'm kidding.
Oh. Well, how many did you have?
I won't even go into that.
Oh, come on.
I was married before.
Just once?
Twice.
Just twice before.
One time I was 23, and I was, you know...
You were 23.
An actress trying to not be in a crazy world. So, so I married someone that I... knew from childhood, and we couldn't have been less suitable partners for one another. I think he's a lovely person, but sort of like, okay, what did we just do?
Yeah, that's amazing how many lovely people who are not suitable for you that are out there.
Yes, exactly. And fortunately, we didn't completely destroy each other. We were just like, oh, it was more like breaking up than getting divorced because we're 23. You know. When we got married, so, I mean, that's crazy. That's a little crazy.
Yeah.
And the next person I married was somebody that I married when I should have known better. No, I'm kidding. anyway. So then there was Jeremy. And then, I'm just going to skip that one.
You're going to skip that one.
For legal reasons.
All right. Well, I mean, I just saw him. My God, he is gorgeous.
Yeah, I know.
It's
crazy.
I mean... Like,
I know. I know.
He's such a like
ecco homo. I know. He's like a man.
Yeah, but he's also like, but he's also not like,
he's
know,
pretty.
He's pretty.
He's
but
so covered with hair right now with the mustache.
He is. Oh no, we saw the play last night.
Oh, you saw it last night?
Yeah. We drove up there.
How great!
Yeah,
great. Yeah. He's
such a mensch.
He's so sweet. I know he's always playing bad guys, which is so funny.
Look, because, I mean, he has such a presence.
Yes.
Like,
he's got a great presence on stage, too, and in the world. But and he is the nicest person and most dutiful person and the best possible.
Good.
It's the best
he's
person.
A good Jew.
He's a good Jew.
Yeah.
He's a good
duty.
Jew. He doesn't think he's a good Jew because he doesn't think he's a good Jew. Like,
oh,
that's how good a Jew he is.
That's the key. Yes.
Yeah. And his father is taking Yiddish classes at the JCC, you know, and then I'll say a few Yiddish words and he'll be like, how come you know more Yiddish than my son?
Oh, yeah.
Like, because I grew up in New York.
Yeah, of course. You know? It's like, Yeah, it's just part of English.
You say punim, you say fe. You say these words, and it's like, Cleo, are you feeling oots? You know, like, and he's like, what? You know what he's saying? I'm the waspiest person ever saying these words because they're just part of my vocabulary.
Sure.
But, yes, he's incredible. I'm very lucky. I know it every day. For two people who literally, it's like having four kids is incredible, and we wanted it, and we did this to ourselves, as he always says, but it's also, very stressful to have four beings be in your charge, and
it's
them
stressful
so close
to have
in age.
One,
and,
stressful to have a, you know, one.
And one wonderful, by all accounts, perfect, your son, David, he's perfect.
Sure.
Don't tell him I said that.
Yeah. I was, honestly, the whole afternoon was just engineered to get him to go mushroom hunting again.
Aww.
Because he hasn't done it for me since he was with me.
Now there's photographic evidence.
I know.
You can prove
it to
him.
His mom.
Oh.
And she was just so, like.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. He's good with little kids.
But even when you have good kids and happy kids and, thank God, healthy kids and nobody's too extremely off the rails and. It's just like, even with all that, you're like, wow, two freelance people who are multi-hyphenate artists who are, you know, hustling, side hustling in every direction to make enough to live on and then also feel some sense of meaning and some sense of community and some sense of providing for your family. It's still with all that, like, it puts tremendous pressure on a relationship.
Yeah,
and even with all that, like, we look at each other and we just are like, if ever there's a moment where we're just, or I should say all the moments where we're like, oh, we just don't have enough time for each other. We don't have time to connect, like time for us, you know, we're just like, yeah, it's a phase of life. We're going to miss this so bad in a few years and just don't worry about it.
What I noticed, and correct me if I'm wrong.
But don't take it for granted.
Don't worry
about it, but don't take it for granted.
No, that's a tough balancing act.
Yeah.
But when you guys come and play and sing with us, you know, and when you guys like singing together, finding somebody that you can sing with, you know, I imagine it's similar to acting with somebody, but you know that when you guys do your duets or you sing together or stuff like that, it's like I just see that like that connection there
it's
super
sweet.
Like you guys sing together. I'm like, oh, these guys. Like
we sing together only there.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh,
we never at home, like, because it's always like,
sure,
if somebody's sitting down with a guitar,
right,
the kids want to play what the kids want to play, and I'm usually like, you know, spinning seven plates over there.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to have a second, even in the company of friends,
especially
in the company of friends, to do that.
You're listening to Foraging Ahead, and I'm Kevin Factor, and my interview with Mary Stuart Masterson. The next segment, Mary Stuart talks about acting, how the industry has changed, growing up with a famous working Broadway mother and father, feminism, women in Hollywood, Me Too movement, and talking sex with your kids.
Funny, acting is such a funny thing because you have to have a script, you have to be given the part, you have to be right for the part, or you should be. And so it's always something you have to be given permission to do as an art. You don't stand in front of a mirror and do a monologue or work on something.
What do you mean by given permission to do?
Well, by someone who hires you.
Oh, okay.
You know, and you can write a play by yourself, you can paint a painting by yourself. You can write a screenplay by yourself. You can make, nowadays with the technology, you can do a lot of making your own content.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a radio program.
Such as
largely
it is.
By
as
yourself,
it is.
Largely. But acting is one of those team sports, you know?
Mm.
And so sort of all the conditions have to sort of line up so that you can do... Can you do something? And then sometimes you're lucky enough to do something that's truly special. Mostly it's luck, and those things don't happen all that often. So it is a little like lightning in a bottle as a career.
Sure.
And I'm finding more and more that it's turning to social media and to the world of, you know, influencers tend to be given roles more than actors these days. It's like people who have a lot of hits or a lot of followers or, yeah, there's a lot of sort of YouTube and Twitter sensations that are being utilized to secure financing for projects.
I did not know
that. Yeah, it's a whole new world out there. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. We're in the 21st century.
Yes, we're in the 21st century. I would like to say oy right now. Oy vey. But it's...
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, does it change...
It doesn't change the theater.
No. Well, theater is...
I mean, it might change Broadway, but Broadway isn't the sum total of the theater or even the pinnacle of the theater necessarily, because even Broadway, it's so expensive to produce that, everything's... little bit of a theme park ride, or has to meet that standard and also be good. And the people who perform on Broadway are absolutely phenomenal and sensational, but the shows themselves, you can find really great theater now in regional theaters and around the world that it didn't used to feel that way. It used to feel like regional theaters were more performing the standards, And then whatever was unique or new would come to Broadway or off-Broadway. And now it's somewhat different. But at least, if you think of Williamstown Film Theater Festival, they're doing all new works now.
Oh, wow.
And that's pretty exciting to think that maybe the sort of regional... theaters and the idea of it is similar to some of the work that I'm doing with Stockade Works in Kingston. The idea of making local work in various ways that sort of decentralizing from New York City or Los Angeles.
And do you think that's an offshoot of sort of this new age of media that we're in?
I think it is the new age of media. I think it's economics as well that.
New York think it is really impossibly is like, expensive now.
Yeah, but the fact that there's this possibility that with technology changing that people can produce a movie for less money in some respects, or they can produce a play in a different place and possibly reach an audience using social media or using these different ways of reaching people or different ways of getting an audience or different ways of pulling people together. And, when you think of even talk about, the technology of something like... Good job.
Aoife, come here. Hey.
When you think of technology, even like just... Lyft and Uber up here. You just go, whoa, it's the country. And people have ways of utilizing technology in such a way that they can take themselves sort of off-grid and stay on-grid. And I don't know how I feel about it in general, but I think it's interesting. Yeah. But I get very upset when I see people going into restaurants with iPads with their kids, like without even letting them try have a conversation or look up and at the person who's kind enough to serve them their meal and
or have a conversation.
Of course, at the table. Yeah. That was a huge part of growing up.
Is it? Yeah.
In our house, even when my mom was in The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Okay. Yeah.
She starred in that show. My dad wrote and directed it, or co-wrote it and directed it on Broadway. And so even with that, dinner was on the table at 6.
Mm-hmm.
She had to leave for the theater at 7.
Did your mom cook dinner?
We had, during that period, we had Gladys, who my mother adored, and we all adored. She was, worked for our family for a number of years, but during that period of time would also prepare a dinner.
Sure.
Because my mom, there was no way. And I wish... I had a Gladys in my life, but I don't. My mom was even during that period of time, that was in the 70s, was interviewed by Ms. Magazine as a woman who had it all.
Right.
And my mom said, no, what you have to understand is you can't have it all without Gladys. You can't. Like, you just can't. Yeah. Or even if your partner is Gladys, whoever, sure. There needs to be, you know, I cannot do it all without help. And they cut all that part out.
No way, really.
Of the interview. And it really incensed her. But she thought, what kind of feminist would I be if I didn't honor this woman,
right,
who is my other half in this domestic partnership? Like, she's married to a man, but this woman is helping her do everything. And she wanted to acknowledge her contribution, you know?
What'd they say? Did they?
And they were like, oh, well, our readers want to...
They want the fantasy.
Yeah.
Which is dangerous.
It's dangerous. That's look at us now. Look at where we are now. We're back at this sort of third wave where there was this place in between, maybe in the 80s, where women were either trying to be more masculine in the workplace or, say, be more, you know, hide the aspects of themselves that they might think look soft, or delay childbearing, or, you know, not have a family, and not just by choice, but because they were afraid of looking weak or looking domestic or whatever. And some people chose what they chose, and that was their choice, and that's fine. But if people were choosing it for some reason, because it wasn't, didn't seem like you could do both, that's kind of sad. And the other piece of it, I think, that I saw, it was a huge trend in the 80s in our business anyway, of women just cutting each other down.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Competing, women executives in Hollywood, really more sexist than the men in many respects about, is she, can I cut, curse? is she someone you could take to bed or not? Like, they would, there's an expression that begins with the word F and it ends in a bull.
Fungible.
Fungible. Yes. Is she fungible? And, it was like there was this, very crass, sort of cliche female executive that was trying to prove that she could hang with the boys, you know? And it was like, it was kind of sad to see that kind of behavior. And being sort of around during that time, just sort of watching it and going, why are people, you know, and watching people try to out-tough each other and out-man each other, if you will, and no matter whether you were male or female. And it's sort of like, it's just, I don't know, missed opportunity. So now I was at the Tribeca Film Festival a couple years ago. There's this terrific luncheon that Jane Rosenthal and Paula Weinstein throw every year, this Chanel luncheon, which is sponsored by Chanel. And it's all about women in film, and they're really, really good about promoting women in film. Genuinely, it's not a sort of surface kind of commitment. They have all kinds of grants and programs, and in any case, they just would talk about every year how, you know, women really need to be there for each other and need to mentor women who are younger than them, who are coming up, and not be threatened by each other. And I'm starting to see more of that now, and which is so great.
Since sort of Weinstein, then this that there has been a clearing, or that there's now more room in the Hollywood ecosystem
I think this is a moment where it needs to be capitalized on, and also, like, when people kick around the word diversity, you have to prove that you're walking your talk. And so it is important that we not say, okay, we did that and it's done. Just like, were we post-racial after Obama? Oh, no, we were not.
No, we were
just getting started.
We were just
exposing, ripping the Band-Aid and the scab off and going, wow, it's really bad. It's worse than my whiteness.
We ripped the
Band-Aid
off of the arm, but apparently the leg has been hemorrhaging for some
exactly.
while.
There are no legs. Yeah, to stand on. So, yeah, we have a long way to go. We have a long way to go, but at least we're looking at it, I think. And at least people are allowed to be heard and are allowed to say, just this whole Me Too thing. Every single person that I know who's female and in our business would easily be able to say Me Too, because our business is that way. It's the culture. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's always been that way.
That was just sort of part of the price that you had to pay.
It's just part of it. It's part of being, you're around it.
Or being a woman. I mean, that's,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
that's sort of the...
unfortunately. I mean, and yet then there's this, to me, I think there is a difference between harassment and rape. And there's a spectrum of behavior when you should go to jail and when you should have professional consequences for, and civil sort of consequences for, and but everybody talking about who they dated and if they were like good to them or not, and when they were sort of trying their best,
right.
We should be still be able to fumble through making a pass at someone that isn't working for you,
right?
Without, you know what I'm saying? Like there's just got to be.
Right.
A way to discuss things without everything being.
I think that's what
political.
The fragile white man is really freaking out about now. It's like, well, I mean, how am I going to?
How am I ever going to date anyone?
How am I ever going to date anybody? Well, yeah. So I
yes.
don't know.
I think going back to the 50s in Brooklyn, or wherever, like you know, in the 50s, like
yeah.
You didn't. There was a code of behavior for men with women or people who were. Let's say going on a date,
right,
or working together in the workplace. You would dress a certain way in the workplace, so as not to be openly. You would not dress the same way at work as you would. I mean, women would have to wear lipstick and a girdle and a thing
heels.
And do their hair, and it was exhausting, I'm sure. But still, there was a professional code of behavior. You were not supposed to. I mean, we're talking, I know that Mad Men did what they did, and people did what they did, and people had affairs with their coworkers all the time and always will, but there was, when you went on a date with someone, you were supposed to behave a certain way.
Right?
There
was a protocol.
There was a protocol on your first date, and you don't do this, and you don't do that, and if you do that, you're a bad girl. If you do that, you're too forward, or whatever. There were ways that people knew there was certain conduct that was always, and so post, like, Women's Lib,
right?
Here you have this whole gender that doesn't know how to behave.
Men?
Yes.
Oh.
Like, what are you supposed to do? Okay, does that mean anything goes? Does it mean... I don't open the door anymore. Do I have manners?
Right,
am I a beast?
Right.
Am
right,
I?
Right.
Do I? When do I? When
no,
do I stop?
It's so
oh,
easy.
When they say no.
Right.
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 And so, but I don't think that there is a new code written. I don't think people know what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I a lot of moms with boys are like, I don't know how to help my son know how to behave and what's correct.
I mean, what I find myself thinking about.
Like, if somebody says no, don't touch them.
Yeah, well, that's
period.
It. That's it exactly. But then.
That's obvious.
I think there's also the fear that, you know, well, I'm just not going to deal with any of this.
Right.
You know, if you're coming of age now, you know,
scary.
Sexually, if you're, you know, coming of age sexually, and you're a boy, you know, and you are, you know, inculcated with these new ways of looking at things, it could be overwhelming. And I'm not in any way defending the old school because it was oppressive. But I've seen a lot of kids just go, you know what? I'm just not going to deal with this, right?
Yeah.
And the fear, you know, it's like. It's like the, you know, the DARE program in school for sex.
Right.
Is like, we're just going to scare them off of drugs, you know.
Right.
Well, that doesn't work.
No.
You know, I mean, maybe a little bit for some kids, but at the end of the day, if you tell kids, you know, if you smoke marijuana, you know, the next thing is going to be, you're going to be like shooting smack in the alley, you know.
Right.
And then the kids like try the marijuana and they go, oh, you know what, this is not. I don't feel like shooting smack in the alley. So then they assume that everything else from
that is not true.
Is not true,
right.
When actually much of it probably is. But then the same thing with, I think we're doing DARE now with sex in a lot of ways. And that, like, just the fear of, like, you know, and post AIDS as well. I mean,
yeah.
it's
God,
that,
it's
that,
scary.
That you know, is like, if you can have sex and you know, be careful, but you know, it's great and it's good and enjoy it, you know. And as a parent talking to you know, a young man who is getting ready to go off to college in a year, and is awesome. It's the most awkward conversation you're gonna have with your kids. You guys are gonna have fun.
Oh yeah,
like you got three, you got four. You got four of those conversations.
We only broached the you know, what sex is once. So far, and it was like, no, you don't. I'm like, well, someday we'll have the conversation later. We're not.
Are you guys gonna break it up? Are you gonna do Cleo?
Oh, we're not gonna
Cleo,
do team sex ed.
You know.
Cleo's in a different room because she's people already at the age of, you know, 7 and 4, 5.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they're sexual
they're there.
Beings.
Yeah. From the start.
You're listening to Foraging Ahead and my interview with Mary Stuart Masterson. Next up, she talks about getting the film and television industry up into the Hudson Valley through her nonprofit and production company.
But so do you want to talk a little bit about Stockade Works? And I mean, this is a project. It's been years in the making, and you guys are doing something truly unique and imaginative.
Thank you.
Why don't you explain what Stockade Works is?
Well, when we moved here 5 years ago, it was because I, you know, had just had our fourth child and was like, we can't hack it. In the city, we had been in the Hudson Valley for since 2006, so 10 years prior, or I'm sorry, 6-7 years prior to that. But we decided to just be up here full time.
Is that right? 2006 was 10 years ago.
12 years ago. I know.
I'm gonna have to check that. I don't think you're right about that.
I check your facts. Check your facts on that. I don't know. My math is also slipping. I'll ask Phineas. But we moved up here, and we knew that it was beautiful. We knew that it was going to be a nature-based kind of environment for, you know, to grow vegetables and children in, and that it would be somewhat more affordable than Brooklyn, and also just sustainable in terms of our mental health. But we were assuming we would be commuting to work. And whenever we could get it. But we also knew that we would have to one at a time it or figure it out, because four kids, you need at least two adults present at all times until they're a certain age, because we had all our kids 3.5 years apart, within 3.5 years. There's a lot of people under the age of 4 in one house. And so we survived that period. And during that time, I was asked to do a TV show in Vancouver.
Ah, what show?
And it was something... it was called Agent X, and the producers were terrific. And I was like, but I can't really do this in Vancouver. I just moved here. And what about Kingston? And they're like, well, huh? And there were, you know, where's Kingston? And like, okay, we've got some work to do. Obviously this, since, you know, the Woodstock Film Festival has been in existence a long time. And, they brought a lot of attention to the Hudson Valley, but more as an sort of aggregator of cinema, arts, and independent film and art house cinema, and not so much as sort of the TV factory, you know, of like an LA or a New York or Vancouver or Toronto or now Georgia, lots of Georgia, Atlanta, and all of the state of Georgia. So I did not do that, and I started thinking, well, why hasn't this happened up here, you know? And looked around, I realized there were a few hurdles, and one of them was that we were in the same we shared in the same percentage as New York City in this wonderful tax credit that is in the state of New York since 2008
for film.
Am I wrong about the date? 2008, yeah, and for film and television production. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, got to work with the local politicians and stuff, like, how can we get a bump, 10% extra for being outside of the city and mm-hmm. at this distance and make it attractive to business? And so, you know, so I suddenly get pulled into all of that. And we won that. And that was passed a law 2016 in November. And it's now 40%. And there's been a 300% increase in production since then, which is great. Largely independent film.
Sure.
And so my whole thought with Stockade Works was, okay, we're going to try to increase film and television production, but the way to do it is to build up the crew base and train the local people to be available to incoming film and television production. And to do that in a way where they wouldn't just be hobbyists coming onto an indie film that was in sort of a non-union, low-budget film and being paid basically minimum wage or less because they get around it,
mm-hmm.
And somewhat being exploited, but having a good time
sure.
being exploited, you can't sustain yourself on that. That's not going to help the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So I got suddenly very passionate about economic development and mm-hmm. workforce development and working with all of the different programs and the Regional Economic Development Council and founded a nonprofit called Stockade Works that's dedicated to bringing film and television here and technology, but creating a workforce that's ready to meet that demand.
Wow.
And ultimately putting them on a track to joining trade unions, because mm-hmm. the bigger productions always are signatories to these trade unions. And by doing so, giving themselves an opportunity to have benefits, pensions, you know, welfare covered. And make more money and be able to live on it. And because after IBM left,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think in the aggregate, something like, by some estimates, 31,000 jobs were lost
yeah.
in this area. And so what manufacturing is going to come back?
Right.
You know, what's going to come back? So there was some...
Coal.
So, you know, coal, yeah. Clean, quote, clean coal. So, you know, at one point there were, people were looking at Legoland or whatever.
Oh,
you know, there's been efforts,
I know.
You know.
It's just like just chasing the tourist dollars. No,
so
this
it's like,
is,
oh, no, tourism
is
doing well,
this
is, but this is industry, and it's light manufacturing as a
yeah.
classification. So if we could, you know, make our facilities up to the standard that would be attractive to larger productions,
mm-hmm.
not just the indies that want to come for a couple of days, but the ones that are going to be there for years.
Right.
And if we could train the workforce, and while doing all of that, do it in a way that's sustainable environmentally,
mm-hmm.
and then also really create greater diversity and access and inclusion and equity on the set by just sort of who we recruit to be part of these programs and who we're training and where we're training them. And
mm. And you're working with BOCES?
So we're working a bit with BOCES, a bit with the community colleges, a bit with the SUNY schools.
Mm-hmm.
We are about to form a community council. We're hoping to get this going very soon. To get some of the local leaders in Midtown Kingston in particular
mm.
to give us real insight into, you know, what that community wants, what it fears, what it needs.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, I'm a white girl from ultimately the Upper West Side. And, you know, I want to make sure that I know, that it's not just enough to say I'm opening the door. You can come in.
Right.
And it's free.
Right.
It's important to... make sure that there's, you know, somebody that from within that community already
mm-hmm.
doing the good work that, you know, Center for Creative Education is doing or TMI is doing or Rise of Kingston. These organizations that have been there and are there now trying to ensure that gentrification doesn't crush people,
right.
and that
no, it's
that we don't just
yeah.
say we're diverse, but we have an open door policy, but actually figuring out a way to reach into the community and say, I'm not going to exploit you by getting this cheap labor out of you, which is a sort of horrible Hollywood colonial history of going to places and exploiting cheap labor and then leaving. I'm trying to be on the side of, we're trying to train you and provide you with a job, mentor you, provide you with connections, and be here for you on an ongoing basis so that, yeah, we're referring those people we train to productions that come to town, but we're also there with that person who stays in town to say, are we meeting your needs? Is this business meeting your needs? What do you need? How's it going? And so forth. So that it's just, it's not just a one and done program. It's not a PA training program and then you're in the system.
Right.
And you're fend for yourself. It's we have a system of a bunch of workshops.
Okay.
And we also have a boot camp program. So the boot camp program is for crew, and we have only done one. We have now a grant for our second one.
Oh.
And we're looking for the right film to do that that boot camp for. But the one that we did last summer, we had 140 applicants. We did it with very quick turnaround for a film that was going to be shooting here in July. So we quickly sent out a newsletter to the people on our newsletter. There's 800 people were signed up to our newsletter, and we did whatever outreach we could as with a quick turnaround. 140 applicants, and we ended up having 23 that were part of our boot camp. More than 50% were women. People were from diverse backgrounds, different ages. Though we want to do better, you know.
Okay, sure.
But it was great.
It
was a great program.
They were hired.
They actually did a film. So within a month,
right?
They got hands-on training. They worked directly with keys in each department, and then they were selected by one department. They could say what they wanted, and then the department head could say what they wanted.
Okay.
And then we did the best we could to match people with what they wanted and what they were suited to. And they worked for 15 days on the film and subsequently went on to work on many other films. So it's worked really well so far. We also know from filmmakers who come to us and ask for, hey, what's it like shooting there? Can you help us out? And basically offering, in essence, free production services by helping give people, oh, go over there, call that guy. You know,
this
woman is terrific. Or pointing them to resources and to our trainees, but also identifying where we have gaps in our crew base. So we just did a sound workshop, for example.
Oh, yeah, Seth was there.
And he was great. So we ended up with like 16 people that were at the end of a three-day workshop ready for referral because they were already... they had very, you know, top-notch trainers that came up from the city and worked pro bono.
Wow.
And that was exciting. So we go, okay, well, where are the gaps? How can we fill the gaps just to make us sort of professionally ready for prime time? And then on the other side, trying to make sure we sort of kind of walk the line of all these different rubrics, you know, of...
rubric gives me chills.
I know, like the
as a teacher.
Well, it's challenging to juggle it all, right? We want to make sure that we're not, we're doing some sort of blend between, hoping that we get we promote the diversity and the access and the inclusion and whatnot, and we also don't discriminate against the white males who want an opportunity and are out of work and would like an opportunity to work. We're finding the balance.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting being on that side of things. So that's the nonprofit.
That's the nonprofit.
And that's since 2016. So it's finally getting its legs and
if somebody was interested in finding more about,
we have a website.
You have a stockadeworks.org.
Yeah, and it's spelled like the actual Webster's, WORKS, not like WERX or something, you know.
Oh, thank you.
Works. WORKS. Stockadeworks. And it's not AID. That's another one.
Oh, right.
I'm not, we're not, yeah.
But so it's like
the Stockade District uptown Kingston. So that's Stockade Works. And then, you know, we're also, I also recently started a production company so that I can get back to my own writing, directing, producing side of things. And that's called Quality Pictures.
Quality Pictures.
And that's qualitypictures.co. But we're very, very nascent. We have a bunch of projects that are written and are being pitched. And so hopefully we'll bring those are all going to shoot in the Hudson Valley.
I could hear the new Quality Pictures.
Quality Pictures. And the funny reason for that is, and it's very much, it's very, very old school. But the reason for the name is, it's a lot to live up to, but the idea being that these are, we're also looking at how we do production, so that these are quality jobs. We are actually, and Stockade Works is, with Stockade Works, we're going to be doing a white paper that we're raising grant money for. But the idea being looking at how our industry does production and the study is called Doing Production Differently. So the idea is we look at how the whole industry, maybe the barriers to entry for women or people who want to have families, is that the average week is 75 hours at work. And it's not sustainable. And so people, when they do have families, they drop like flies. People divorce. People, you know, you can't, you even if you're working all the time, which is awesome, it's insanity to work those kinds of hours for 9 to 10 months a year. So we're looking at, there's something called French hours, which is you work straight eight. So you have little walking snack meals, substantial snack meals, but you don't stop for an hour for lunch. You don't have people arrive at work before call and get breakfast. You just, you arrive having had, they call it, breakfast. You begin work and you finish.
They call it breakfast.
They call it having had.
Having had. Oh.
Arrive having had.
Yes.
Is code for you arrive having had breakfast.
Yes.
And you arrive at work and you work straight through and then you have meals, a meal at the end of the day. And so it's civilized. It's so French. It's like they put wine on the table and people eat and they go home and they have time to talk and converse and it's not. It's not a factory. It's it's still considered a sort of a creative art. But, you know, looking at budgeting French hours side by side with this 80-hour work week, from a money standpoint, if people live where they work and you're not putting them in hotels and you don't have that to deal with, it's actually almost a wash. Because for every day that a crew member works more than 8 hours, you get into time and a half, and you get, depending on what union they're in, what job they do. Some people, their day is 8 hours. Some people, it's 10. Some people, it's a 12-hour day.
Wow.
As the base rate. But everything over that is time and a half. And if you add all that time and a half up and in triple time and double time and weekend time and golden time and overtime and meal penalties and all the stuff that it adds up and it is more expensive.
True.
So we're looking at shooting in this different way also. And so the quality part of Quality Pictures is hopefully the content, but it's also the quality of life for the people and the way that we shoot and the way that we make our work. And that it be a quality job.
That sounds great.
Doesn't that sound good?
That sounds great.
I hope it works.
Quality Pictures.
I hope it works.
And I'd like to thank Mary Stuart Masterson for sitting down with me and talking and just being a wonderful, wonderful person, and her kids for coming out mushroom hunting, and Aoife, my dog, for providing ambient barking, and the crickets too for contributing to the background noise. Y'all have a great Sunday.
Everybody's a dreamer, and everybody's a star, and everybody's in shock. doesn't matter who you are. And those who are successful be always on your guard. You see, success walks in.